Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. He did not fit the profile of a serial killer. Somehow, how could he be one? That's the question everyone was asking as they tried to connect the dots. The dots involving the brutal slayings of more than 10 women in Southern California. How did they find the killer? And how did they determine that they had the right man? Today, the story of the grim sleeper, Lonnie David Franklin Jr., on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
An elusive serial killer linked to 10 slayings in South Los Angeles and Inglewood over nearly two decades, resurfaced in 2008 to kill again, Los Angeles police officials said. Long stretches of time between known killings and a disjointed, often dormant investigation that spanned different generations of detectives left police unclear for years that a single man was behind the slayings. The latest slaying was tied conclusively to the others by DNA analysis in May of 2007. The day those tests came in, we realized we had a serial killer on our hands who'd been active for 23 years, said LAPD Detective Dennis Kilcone, who heads the task force of seven detectives charged with solving the killings. Except for one man, the killer has targeted young black women. He sexually abused the women, detectives said, and left almost all of their bodies in a corridor along Western Avenue in South Los Angeles, often in alleys. Detectives suspect that most of the women were working as prostitutes at the time that they were killed. Kilcone and his team have been working quietly, trying to breathe life into the investigation without tipping off the killer. They've retracted cold leads and are collaborating with state officials on an exhaustive search of prison records. Detectives have begun examining nearly three dozen other cases that bear similarities in serial killer slayings. The latest killing was reported this week by the LA Weekly. For more than two decades before that, however, the killer slipped on and off the LAPD's radar. The first known slaying occurred in the summer of 1985, when 29-year-old Deborah Jackson was shot three times in the chest, police said. Her body was left in an alley near West Gage Avenue. It was a particularly dark period for the city when widespread cocaine use, rampant crime, and vicious killings were rife in South L.A. 3 years passed before police realized that something larger was occurring when ballistics tests showed that the same handgun used to kill Jackson had been used in seven other killings. Detectives handling the investigation were troubled. In late 1988, the killer shot a woman in the chest with the same gun, sexually assaulted her, and left her for dead. She survived, giving police their first, albeit vague, description of a man as an African-American in his mid-30s. She also described his car as orange Ford Pinto. The new information led detectives to pull registration records on every Pinto in Los Angeles County, said the sergeant, but the search led nowhere. Then the trail went cold. For about 13 years, no new deaths were linked to the killer. Everything just dried up. They ran out of clues. They got onto other things, Kilcone said of the detectives working the case. The cases got moved further and further back on the shelf. The killer had been all but forgotten until a few years ago when recently developed DNA analysis technology made it clear he was still at large and still killing. In 2001, LAPD detectives, under the direction of Police Chief Bernard C. Parks, began delving into thousands of unsolved cases that had built up over the years. In 2004, Detective Cliff Shepard was poring over old murder cases from South L.A. and found a preserved DNA sample that was taken from the body of one of the killer's earlier victims. Analysis of the DNA showed that it showed conclusive similarities to samples found on the body of a 35-year-old woman killed in 2003 and on 14-year-old Princess Berthamu, who was found strangled and beaten in an Englewood alley in March of 2002. All of a sudden, we had two more, Kilcone said. But again, the case has faded, with detectives no closer to finding the killer. And again, he seemed to disappear with no more killings tied to him. In 2006, an Englewood detective made headlines when he traveled to Fresno and to a prison to get a DNA sample from a 65-year-old white inmate who had made incriminating statements about killing prostitutes in L.A. to law enforcement officials. But tests showed he was not the killer. Then on the first day of 2007, a homeless man found the body of Jayensa Peters, 25, on Southwestern Avenue. She'd been shot and covered with a garbage bag. When DNA tests linked her killer to the earlier slayings, Police Chief William J. Bratton ordered Kilcone to launch the task force. Investigators checked the killer's DNA against a federal DNA database of known criminals, but again found no matches. One popular theory among detectives, Kilcone said, was that the killer was in prison during the two distinct periods when no killings were connected to him. Following that lead, investigators of the California Department of Corrections have been working with the LAPD task force to sort through a list of about 50,000 inmates from Los Angeles County who were convicted of violent crimes during one of those periods and do not have DNA samples on record. The two agencies are filtering the lists in search of men who were in prison during both periods of the killer's apparent inactivity. But Kilcone said the killer may have just avoided detection and committed crimes that have not been connected to him. It cannot be so arrogant to think that everything this guy has ever done came with an LAPD crime report attached to it, he said. The task force has identified 33 old LAPD cases that have similarities to the killings and have begun the painstaking process of reviewing them. Task force members also automatically receive alerts when other LAPD detectives or uninformed cops report a homicide involving females found outdoors. They visited more than 15 crime scenes, but none have had the marks of the suspect they're looking for. One promising route the LAPD has not yet been able to try is comparing the serial killer's DNA with samples in the criminal database in search of his close relatives. The familial searches can be done, but only with permission of Attorney General Jerry Brown. The technique is controversial, with critics calling it an invasion of privacy. Spokesperson for Brown declined to comment on whether or when Brown would approve a familial search on the case. LAPD Deputy Chief Charlie Beck, meanwhile, said the department would love to pursue it if it becomes available. And that's where we start today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. That would be the article, one of the articles that was written very close to the time of them starting to determine who Lonnie David Franklin Jr. is and his connection to that spree of insanity that went on for many, many years. It's Tony and Sean with you on today's episode of the program. Thoughts thus far on old Lonnie?
So to make sure we're on the same page here, there was a 13-year stretch where nothing occurred, and then they were gonna link a murder that did happen back to 13 years ago?
Yeah, because he did a lot of these crimes in the 80s, and then in the early 2000s, he popped back up onto the radar because of the DNA evidence. So they found the same DNA on crimes that were committed around 08 as the same DNA that was on the very similar crimes that were committed in like 88 or something like that. And so they realized this is the same guy, but they didn't know who he was at that point.
So what are you doing for 13 years? I mean, obviously you have found a new hobby that has kept you busy for 2, 6, 7, 8 years.
Model trains.
What makes you wake up one day 13 years later and say, you know what? That itch needs to be scratched again.
I don't know. I don't know what that is. Is it something with some people where they commit a crime? Because the problem with criminals is the fact that they think they can keep repeating and getting away with it over and over and over. But most of them do it somewhat frequently, where it's like, I got away with that. I'm going to try that again. They keep going and going and going, whether it be murder, whether it be financial crimes, whether it be whatever it is. It's very rare that somebody has the, I guess, lack of impulsivity or control to say, you know what, I'm good. Got my killing in. I'm going to go work at Denny's, you know, as a prep cook or something. And then they're just good. So I don't know what he did for 13 years. We'll probably get into that here and figure that out. But that's the weird thing about this is did he just sit there and, you know, move on with his life? I don't know. I mean, how do you move on with your life? I mean, number one, how do you commit these crimes to begin with? But then let's say you do commit those crimes and somehow you realize that was wrong. Shouldn't have done that. Do you turn yourself in and do that and take what justice will give you? Or do you at that point say that was wrong and I'm going to hope to God I never get caught?
Just is so interesting to do something so heinous as killing multiple people and then to have such a long stretch where you don't and then you get back into it. But I would imagine that just adds to the list of certain things that we just do not... Yeah. We're not able to comprehend within our brain of someone that would not only do that once, but do it multiple times and taking another person's life.
Well, and the thing is, when they're in prison, you'll sometimes hear the stories of, oh, they realized they were wrong and now they found God or whatever they found. And they're so horribly sorry and they just want to do something good with their life. And now they're counseling other prisoners or doing this or that. And they're, you know, they realize they're in there for the rest of their lives and they're not trying to get out, but they've accepted their guilt. I guess someone could do that on the outside if they were never caught and then try and turn their life around. But are you really turning your life around if you never admit your guilt to those crimes with those people, those families that have a loved one who's dead? And no one knows who the hell did it. Can you ever really turn your life around there and do good, quote unquote, or make anything of yourself? Or are you obligated at that point to say, I did this shit? Come give me the consequences.
I think that is to the person that makes a decision. Quite honestly, I think if you want to truly make your life better and turn it around, you can. Mm-hmm. You'll just bury whatever that guilt or whatever it is. You'll bury it away and it will never come up and you can live the rest of your life. I would then think that there are certain people who try and ultimately do turn themselves in. But I absolutely think someone can kill someone. The family and their loved ones will never, ever find out who did it. And you can go on his life and be a successful insurance person, real estate agent, car detailer. I mean, I'm half joking. Sure. Very sad that you would like to think that you can, that you or me could kill someone when we're, I don't know, 20. Mm-hmm. And then 22 years old, wake up one day and say, you know what? It's just, we're going to take that mental thoughts. We're going to put them in a shoebox. We're going to bury them like I did the body and we're good.
That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia, wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday.